The Guardian.
Guardian Holiday Offers is pleased to bring you a great selection of worldwide trips from our trusted partners. From cultural tours and adventure holidays to river cruises and cottage breaks, we have something for everyone. To find your perfect break, go to guardian.co.uk/travel with us. That's guardian.co.uk/travel with us.
In the slowest lift in London, and we are getting to the top. The doors are about to open. Premature. This is the lift that never arrives. But it is going to the heart of darkness, so perhaps it's hardly surprising. I've just arrived at the top of the Queen Elizabeth Hall for the 10th visit to A Room for London. And we've been here in all weathers, starting off in the winter when it was all bleak and almost snowy, going through the summer. Then we've seen the Olympic celebrations begin, roll out and be packed away. And now it's autumn and there is a thin drizzle over London as the sun sets and all the lights are on. I am walking up to the Room for London now and the lights have just gone on and I'm going to knock at the door. I'm here to see Carmilla Shamsie, the Pakistani novelist, whose last novel, Burnt Shadows, told a great story, sweeping story of post-colonial heritage after the Second World War. So who more suitable than to deliver this Room for London essay? We're now in the boat and going up a very precipitous stepladder, which I have to say I haven't dared scale before, but Carmilla is very intrepid. And it leads to a little viewing tower right up the top of the boat with views out across the Thames. Amazing views, it's just getting darker. Carmilla, this is your fourth and final day on the boat. How's it been for you?
It's been lovely. I'm going to be a little bereft, I think, when I leave. It's particularly strange because I live in London and I haven't felt at all as though I'm in the city I live in. You know, you're high above it all. And it's been extraordinary.
And so what have you been thinking about while you've been here?
I've been thinking about Virginia Woolf more than Conrad, although, of course, this boat is the Conrad boat, the Foire de Belge. But it's the room of one's own that I've been thinking of. And I've been thinking a lot about women travellers as opposed to male explorers, and the women in my family who've travelled and how they're actually really explorers to me. And also Big Ben, you know, turning backward when the clocks move and all kinds of things. There are all kinds of ideas that cohere together, I think, in this place.
So Big Ben, the clocks going back, of course you're here at a turning point of the year.
I am, and I stayed up to watch it turn back, except the terrible thing is the clock face goes dark. So you can't actually see, and I used my binoculars to try and still see the moment when it moved backwards. And the terrible truth which the Guardian can reveal is they move it early. So instead of moving at 2 o'clock, by 1:35 it had already moved backwards.
Shocking news, and you heard it first from A Room for London perched up above the Thames. So let's now hear your essay.
Not a yellow brick road, but a yellow door leads you here. This yellow door leading to an unpromising corridor with a paint-splattered cement floor. And that's exactly right. Enough of childhood stories linger for me to know that places of wonder are more likely to exist through rabbit holes, through wardrobes, through paint-splattered cement corridors than at the end of frescoed hallways where knowing angels watch from gilded ceilings. At the end of the corridor, a button with an upward-pointed arrow. I press it, and the steel doors open. I've been warned by the ones who came before about the lift, though some call it the elevator. 2:05 from departure to destination, a journey stubbornly refusing to progress with the seamless imperceptibility of the next-door London eye. Instead, the lift rattles and whirs, just to let me know I'm going somewhere, on the move, to make sure I know that where I end up will be far, far from where I've been. This, too, is exactly right. I have a friend whose workplace used to be a 2-minute walk from her house, and though she is a woman of environmental consciousness, each morning she got into her car and drove in a great loop for 10 minutes, then parked a short distance from home, even in the depths of a snowy upstate New York winter. I wanted to keep the two worlds separate, she told me once. That story makes more sense to me now than ever, in the 2 minutes and 5 seconds I rise not very high, yet very far from the world I leave behind. The known world, the inhabited by many world. Arriving here, in this place so far apart, just a few seconds after leaving the familiar streets around the South Bank Centre, would be insufficient, slightly deranging. A journey, a voyage, is needed to arrive at the Roi de Belge. Steel doors open onto a raised cement walkway on the roof of the Queen Elizabeth Hall, leading to an improbable aerial vessel, high above the bridges and barges of London. One ship is very much like another, Conrad writes in the opening pages of Heart of Darkness. And yes, this ship, the Roi de Belge, is, from the outside, very much like Conrad's own Roi de Belge. But to me, it is like no other ship. I have known I will live here for months now. All year I've stopped on the pathways across the Thames, on the south and north bank of the river, or on the top deck of buses, looking up, seeking out this future home of mine. So when I finally open the back door, the only door, to the ship and enter this space that appears much larger from the inside than the outside, like Mary Poppins' handbag or that old wardrobe, the ghost of Conrad does not immediately greet me. A few short miles away is the home I live in every day, presently filled with my closest family. Much loved as they are, their arrival has made writing at home impossible, forcing me into the British Library. A glorious place, but lacking that thing I am so desirous of when I sit at my desk. A window to look out of, a view of the world. Now, here it is, here I am, here she is. Not the ghost of Conrad, but the presiding spirit of Virginia Woolf, here in a room of one's own. Howling wind on this cold, cold autumn night, as I push aside a paperback, Heart of Darkness, and reach for Virginia Woolf writing about Conrad's early novels. Complete and still, very chaste and very beautiful, they rise in the memory as, on these hot summer nights, in their slow and stately way, first one star comes out and then another, she writes. I see only the brightest stars above the Thames. The lights of central London reach to the sky, so it is never really dark here, and I can't forget the city. My companions on this ship are the writers who've been here before. Juan Gabriel Vasquez, Jeanette Winterson, Sven Lindqvist, Carol Phillips, Maya Jasanov, Mike Lundache, Elaine Mabanku, Teju Cole, Adaf Suaif. Late at night, I look out at the lights strung along the riverbank and listen to the podcasts of each one's London address, hearing the seasons drift past in their voices as they speak of winter and summer, of the Jubilee and the Olympics. They speak, too, all of them, of writers. Conrad and Conrad and Conrad and Conrad and Eliot and Eliot and Jack London and Jack London, Samuel Selvon, Rabindranath Tagore, André Gide, Peter Ackroyd, Chinua Achebe, V.S. Naipaul, Edward Said, Ernest Hemingway, Mark Twain. The world in a boat, the world of writers, the world of men. When Jeanette Winterson mentions Carol Ann Duffy, it is the only invocation of a woman who writes. Conrad wrote of women in Heart of Darkness in a way that anyone would find hard to remember. His voyagers, his explorers, the great knight errants of the sea, as he calls them, are all men. Marking their line in Britain, he starts with Francis Drake and continues on to John Franklin. He forgets Lady Franklin, the first woman to receive the Royal Geographical Society's gold medal in 1860. Who can blame Conrad for that? Lady Franklin's medal wasn't conferred on her for any voyage of discovery, but for self-sacrificing perseverance in sending out expeditions to ascertain the fate of her husband. This fate, when finally ascertained, was none too pleasant. Stranded, his crew took to cannibalism. Unknown if he was eater or eaten, or both. In the more than 150 years since, only 8 women have received the gold medal. Mary Somerville in 1869, Gertrude Bell in 1918, Doreen Ingrams, or as she is named in the citation, Mrs. Harold Ingrams, who received the medal along with Mr. Harold Ingrams in 1940, Freya Stark in 1942, Monica Christensen in 1989, Anne Stein-Instard in 1991, Diana Liverman in 2010, Sylvia Earle in 2011. Is it strange, or not at all strange, that travel writing has traditionally been so strongly associated with women, but exploration is seen as a man's game? On this ship going nowhere as I write, I am aware of two women who grew up in Parda and first left the world of seclusion behind in order to travel. The first, my great-grandmother Inam Habibullah, voyaged from India to England in 1924 to visit her three sons in boarding school, where they had been sent by their Anglophile father. In London, as she related in her accounts of her travels, written in Urdu, she saw the sights, read newspapers avidly, was particularly interested in court cases, and was appalled by a play at the Haymarket which depicted an Indian as a savage who has failed to imbibe the humanity at the heart of Englishness. When it came time to return to India, her husband suggested she might consider staying out of Parda. She agreed, but only on the condition that she would spend her time in the unsecluded world in service of her nation and community. She went on to become a member of the All India Muslim League, was elected to the 1937 Legislative Assembly, and was one of the moving forces behind founding the women's wing of the party. Her daughter-in-law, my grandmother, Jahanara Habibullah, also left Parda in order to board a ship. In 1930, aged 16, she travelled with her sister and parents to Switzerland, where her sister received treatment for tuberculosis. The scandal of the girls discarding Parda was so great that her sister's engagement was broken off by the family of her fiancé. Like her future mother-in-law, my grandmother never returned to Parda after her travels to Europe and England. Though the greatest change that occurred in her life was decades later in Karachi, when her memoirs were published. The night before she died at the age of 86, a few days before her book was published, she telephoned her sister-in-law to say, "All these years I was turned into a housewife and made useless. I should have been a writer." No coincidence that she started writing soon after my grandfather died. That's when she became a woman with a room of her own. There will be no gold medals for my grandmother and great-grandmother. No Conrad will name them in the list of knight-errants of the sea. But now the rain falls around my flying boat, Billie Holiday sings the blues, and I try to step into their lives and imagine the London visible outside my window as it might have been in 1924 or in 1930, when it was the very heart of the darkness that was empire. And I know the journeys they made were not mere travel, but exploration and discovery. It is late now. I have stayed awake to watch the clock hands of Big Ben move backward as British summertime ends. As I wait, I read the log book of the Roi de Belge. Everyone who comes here writes something, leaves a mark. I turn the pages. I read these lines. Why is no one in the Savoy hotel rooms? Why are all the lights left on? The shard has disappeared. The sax player has been replaced by a jackhammer. Woken by strange bumping sound, can't see anything from the window. It can only be one thing. Ghost sharks, fruit vendors, evangelists, coffee cups half full, church bells, roadworks, helicopters, elevators, the head of a cloth camel, inside of eyelids. What flood are we waiting for? Where does the time go? The bus I used to get to work is crossing the bridge. Looks like a doomed vessel. Woken by a mad wind, disturbing dreams, the eye seems to have stopped. Some part of me is prepared by all this for the moment I look out of the window 25 minutes before BST ends and see that the hands of Big Ben have already moved backward, unseen by me. Who else is watching? I only am escaped to tell thee. The moon is full, or nearly so. A clock face without hands. Impossible to know if time is moving backward or forward. I write to a friend who is writing far away in her own room to tell her of the clock famed for its reliability, which moves back before its time. She replies, proves what you can do hidden in plain view. Up here, I'm hidden in plain view. Below, a world not thinking to look up for writers with binoculars in hand. It's necessary, I realize, to go down into that world before the view, all those little people, becomes a way of seeing. In the morning, my body and the clocks in two separate time zones, I descend in the lift on a voyage back to Earth. 2 minutes, 5 seconds. Less than 5 seconds in, I'm riveted, disbelieving. Where there should be the lift manufacturer's name, I read Alimak, A-L-I-M-A-K. As an adolescent, my absorbed mind turned words upside down, reading them back to front. Ut-Ib roton ut-Ib. I knew the first 10 or 12 lines of to be or not to be backward. So I remember, in a glance, the word Alimak. It's my name, presented to me in the form of my own mind's games. I think this must happen with all the writers that come here. The manufacturer's name spells out Ujet for Teju, Liakim for Michael, Fadha for Ahdaf. Of course it does. This is, after all, a lift to a world of enchantment, a lift to a room in which Virginia Woolf might write the waves and not be swept away by them.
Guardian Holiday Offers is pleased to bring you a great selection of worldwide trips from our trusted partners. From cultural tours and adventure holidays to river cruises and cottage breaks, we have something for everyone. To find your perfect break, go to guardian.co.uk/travel with us. That's guardian.co.uk/travel with us.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.